Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name's David Inge. This is the second hour of the show. Glad to have you with us. The producers for this program, Harriet Williamson, Martha Deal, and Jason Croft, is at the controls this morning. It is very clear that American newspapers today are facing very tough times. Readership and revenues both are in decline, and in many places, some newspapers have responded by reducing staff and cutting back on content, all with an eye on the bottom line. And that concerns a lot of people, that in fact, perhaps, concerns about the bottom line overrule concerns about editorial content and the mission of the newspaper. This morning in this part of the show, we'll talk a little bit about all of these trends and perhaps look at this large question of the future of the newspaper as we know it. And our guest for this part of Focus 580 is John Levine. He is Dean of the Medill School of Journalism at Northwestern University. He's also Professor of Media Management and Strategy at Medill and in the Kellogg School of Management. Before becoming dean, in January of last year, he was the founding director of Northwestern's Media Management Center. Before that, he was professor of media economics at the University of Minnesota. And before that, for more than 25 years, he was publisher, editor of four daily and four weekly newspapers in Wisconsin. He's joining us from Northwestern by our ISDN connection. So we want to thank the folks on the other end there, the engineers, so that it can sound as good as it does. And as we talk, we certainly welcome questions from people who are listening. The only thing we ask of callers is that people are brief as possible, just so that we can keep things moving along and get in as many different callers as possible. But certainly, listener comments and questions are welcome here in Champaign-Urbana, the number 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line, and that is good anywhere that you can hear us. If you're listening around Illinois and Indiana, over the air, over the internet, 800-222-9455. That's the toll-free line, and locally, 333-9455. And Professor Levine, thanks very much for talking with us.
David, it's a pleasure to be with you and the Focus 580 listeners.
Can you give us a little bit of a sense about what is happening and has been happening in recent years with newspaper circulation?
Well, circulation has grown, but has not nearly kept up with the growth of the population. That's a 20-plus year trend. And it's part of the larger picture of the world going digital, but also in part the issues that challenge newspapers.
Mm-hmm. I have read that and you asked this question about what's happening with circulation and how newspapers are doing, that in answering that question, you have to say, well, maybe it depends on what kind of paper you're talking about. That is, the big metro dailies seem to have greater difficulty than perhaps papers that are located in smaller or medium-sized cities, and that they're doing a little bit better, perhaps because they don't quite face the competition that the New York Times and the LA Times and the Chicago Tribune and the Washington Post face. Is that essentially true?
Well, let me try to split the question in two. First of all, I don't think we're well served by talking about circulation. Mm-hmm. The typical metropolitan daily delivered at home 7 days a week is read by roughly 4.4 of those 7 days. I think the number you really want to track is readership, because that's what matters. Are they informed citizens because they read the news? Do they see the advertising that supports the news? That's really the question that counts most. And if you look at readership, there are three tiers of newspapers. There's the three national newspapers, the New York Times, as you suggested, the Wall Street Journal, USA Today. Then there are about 41 big metropolitan dailies like the Chicago Tribune, and one for each of the major metropolitan cities, or in occasional instances, two of those papers. And then 75-80% of the dailies in America are 50,000 circulation and under. 50% of them are 25,000 circulation and under. So there's these three tiers, the metros in the middle, the big national papers on top, and then the large number of smaller dailies. And you're right, having set up that framework, the readership and the competition for the metros is really being hammered, and the smaller dailies have less competition. They are the sort of big player in their markets, and some of them are doing quite well.
Yeah. Two, and I take your point about using the, perhaps I shouldn't even have started out using the term circulation, because that's, there's a difference between that and who's reading the papers. And in fact, I think that there have been recent cases where there have been questions raised about how newspapers actually report their circulation and whether those figures are good or not. So if we go to the question of readership, of who reads newspapers, how many people are reading newspapers, has readership declined?
It has, and the easiest way to track the decline is by age and education, but primarily by age. So if you, the younger the audience, the they're not reading. That's a bad sentence, but you get what I mean. Mm-hmm. Young people do read, but they don't read anywhere near as much as the 50, 60, 70-year-old population does.
Hmm. Let's talk about profits, because this seems to be the thing that a lot of people are concerned about. That is, concerns over profits are driving editorial decisions, they're driving staffing decisions, and certainly we have seen places where the owners of the papers have said to the people who run the papers, look, we've got a problem here, you're going to have to decrease your costs, that means you're going to have to cut down on staff. And there are also questions about content and about maybe not cutting down on overall news coverage, but cutting down certain sorts of things and making trimming at the edges and cutting those things that perhaps aren't considered to be essential content. First of all, can you say something about profitability of newspapers?
Yeah, newspapers historically are quite profitable. I mean, the typical supermarket makes 0.5% to 2 or 2.5%. The heavy industry, 6 to 8%. Newspapers will make 20% pre-tax profit. Now, that's a little deceiving because you have two factors pushing the issue. One is that the cost for newspapers of doing business, you can ride along for a period of years fairly flat, and then they buy a press or do something major, and it takes enormous resources. So a buildup of those profits is necessary if they're going to continue to compete, especially now in a both digital and print age. But they've been very profitable. For the publicly traded newspapers, when they start, in the early 90s, they were, I think on average, the publicly traded newspapers fell to 14%+ pre-tax profit from the low 20s. And Wall Street just, was outraged and said, this is a bad scene. And many newspapers thought they'd gone into the Great Depression. So, their profit margins have been quite high. And the expectation of investors is that they will be high. And so, indeed, what has happened recently is that with advertising flowing away and readership declining, especially in the visible metros, let's separate that from the rest of the dailies in the country, the investment community has started to say, we're really concerned. And so the response that business, like any business, the quick thing you can always do is cut costs. That shows, up on the bottom line rather instantly. A dollar not spent becomes a dollar of profit. It's a different question, of course, over the long term, whether that's a smart strategy and how it's exercised.
Do you think, I don't know if this is something that you would want to say, but do you think that in the pursuit of profit that newspapers have sacrificed content?
I think the simplistic answer is some certainly have. And especially when they're trying to react quickly. And, that isn't just newspapers. That's any business that's caught in a sort of swift downturn. You can't, a newspaper has to be a business. So if it doesn't have profits, nothing happens. A free press goes away. But I think it's a more subtle and complicated equation than that. The real question is, what's the changing nature of newspapers? What are they about to become? And yes, some topics of news are not covered the way they were, but they are evolving quickly. And I really guess your listeners would do well to not think of any newspaper any longer as just a newspaper. Mm-hmm. I don't know any that doesn't have a website, that isn't working on a strategy to end up on cell phones, which are massive, that isn't moving towards a portfolio of product strategy where there's different print products and different digital products serving the community in different ways. So it's too simple to simply say that newspapers are cutting and newspapers are not covering things. You really have to say, where are they going? What else are they doing? And then you start to get a fuller picture, which is an evolving one. We surely don't have great clarity about that road 5 or 10 years out, but we've gone far enough down it that we have a fair amount of clarity already as to there are some papers in the world in metropolitan markets that are growing.
Yeah. Well, do you think that sometimes when we get into these discussions about what's happening with the newspaper, that that we have two camps? We have those people who still think that it was somehow scandalous that the New York Times went with color photos on the front page, that they still have this kind of gray lady picture of what a newspaper should be, and those people who, in addition to wanting the news, want other sorts of things. They like the idea that there is a what one might call softer content, more feature stuff, more lifestyle stuff, and that that's just fine with them, and that, that it's, a, in a sense, a struggle between people who have two different ideas about what a newspaper, and I guess I'm still thinking about the paper thing that you hold in your hands, what they want that to be.
Well, I guess I reject that characterization. I think the discussion over the Times or the Wall Street Journal putting color is a passing thing, and it's fairly back in history now. A year or two ago is a long time. I don't think that's where most people's heads are, and that's not what the studies say are a big deal. Let me try to paint a different picture for you. The newspaper comes out once a day. Television, so it has one edition a day in the morning. Television has 3 or 4 editions a day. The morning news, the news, 6 o'clock, 10 o'clock. Radio, if it has news, not many do, but is hourly. What we're moving towards rapidly and what, how we're educating students at McGill now is that you publish to the small screen. You publish to the net. So that instead of having one edition a day for the newspaper, the reader could go online, go on their cell phone, however they choose to get that information, and literally be updated by the news that the newspaper produces all day long, 24 hours a day. And that frees the print paper to do things that it always tried to do and couldn't. It had to cover yesterday's news because when I put out newspapers in Wisconsin, if you wanted to know if the world was there, you read our newspaper with 90% household coverage because that was the only way you knew what happened yesterday. Well, of course, now you know it on the web and you know it on radio and you know it on television. And the print newspaper then has the opportunity to continue to do hard news. We're not walking away from that. To say that the school board met and passed a reading program last night. But we assume that the audience is going to know a lot of those things on air before they pick up the paper. So the paper's job will be to say, in hard news terms, what jobs will that mean for the community? What's that going to mean for students going to school? Their job then will be to update the news in the print paper. And most important, to stop worrying about so much what happened yesterday, cover it, but briefly. But to go back into the schools 18 months from now and say, you passed a reading program today, if it was today, 18 months from now, they'll go in and say, what's happened? Are students reading more? That's a job that can't be done very well on radio or television and can be brilliantly done by the newspaper. And so covering the hard news impact of what's going on in the community suddenly becomes an opportunity for the print paper that we're all looking forward to. Hmm.
So it sounds as if what you're saying is that for newspapers, the challenge and the opportunity are essentially the same. That is, there are today many sources of information and a lot of different devices and platforms you can use to get that information that might have initially have been bad for the readership and the circulation of the paper, and that news organizations are moving into this new area and trying to take advantage of the opportunities of this new digital world. How well are they doing in doing that?
Well, actually, for most markets, the newspaper is the 800-pound gorilla. I mean, if you think about the number of reporters and editors a daily newspaper has in any size community, a weekly, a small daily, a metropolitan daily, you know, Anne Marie Lipinski has, I don't know, 600-700 reporters at the Chicago Tribune. She has more than I'm sure all the broadcast outlets in town by some multiple. So they have a huge advantage. If they go 24/7, if they're constantly publishing to the small screen, to the internet, then, you know, they can really do something that it will be very hard for anyone else to do. And the questions come in two forms. Can they change their culture to do that and learn the skills that they need? And how do they afford it? The economic model, it becomes a real question. But there are big companies in this country, Gannett and others, that are literally saying everything goes to the small screen. All of our print reporters will tell stories with words, sound, and pictures. And, you know, they're finding that it's really quite exciting.
Our guest in this hour of Focus 580, John Levine. He is dean of the Medill School of Journalism at Northwestern. He's also professor of media management and strategy in Medill and in the Kellogg School of Management. And we're talking a bit about what is happening in the world of newspapers today and about how they are dealing with changes in what people want, changes in who's reading papers and getting their information from various kinds of places. Questions are certainly welcome. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Do you think that, assuming that you think that the newspaper, the paper, again, the paper thing that people hold and read that way has some kind of a future, do you think, though, it is possible to try to recruit younger readers? That seems to be one of the big gulfs in between when you look at who's reading papers now, the paper, and who's getting their news and information from other ways. It does seem to break down pretty dramatically by age. And younger people seem not quite as inclined to read newspapers as maybe their parents do or their grandparents. Is there some idea that papers can make the product or some kind of product attractive to a younger reader? Is that, or are they just thinking, well, if those people want to go to, if they want to read it off their laptops or their cell phones or their personal digital assistants, well, that's fine. We don't care if they buy the paper or not.
Well, I think they do care if they buy the paper or not, because, you know, if you're a metropolitan paper and a 7-day reader, let me talk economics for a second, because free press, you know, I easily argue it's much better to have advertisers supporting the press so everybody transparently knows who they are than the government or the political party or the dictator or the church or the somebody else. That's 80% of a daily newspaper's dollar, revenue dollar in the United States comes from advertising. Circulation pays for the paper on rolls and the ink in barrels. That's it. Everything else comes from advertising. That reader of a metropolitan paper is worth in excess of $200 a year to the company that puts out any major metro in this country. The website that they have is lucky to bring in $25 to $35 a year versus $200. And the free paper they might have is $15 to $20. So if you lose one 7-day-a-week subscriber, you're going to have to get, you know, 10 of the website users, or even more than that, of the free paper users. We're not there yet. The problem we have, David, is that the economic models for the replacement platforms simply don't begin to equal what you need to afford a big news staff. So that's one real problem. Now, let me turn the coin over. If I had said to you, hey, David, how about investing your life savings in a new newspaper in Chicago? There's two metropolitan dailies. And just to make it, you know, juicy, we'll go after non-newspaper readers who are 18 to 34. I suppose if I had said that to you 4 years ago, you wouldn't rush to put your life savings into that pot. Yet today, Red Eye, the free newspaper of the Chicago Tribune, has 300,000 readers a day, nearly 800,000 cumulatively in a week, and they are 18 to 34-year-old non-newspaper readers prior to picking up Red Eye. That's a huge American newspaper. So you can't say it can't be done. It is being done, and it's being done all across the country. Now, are they as well informed as they would be if they read the New York Times or the Chicago Tribune's big paper? Absolutely not. Are they 10 or 20 times better informed than they would be if they only heard, you know, the 5-minute newscast, which is less than 5 minutes on radio, or the TV news, which is only the front page of a paper at night? They're vastly better informed. And Red Eye has gotten more meaty, more hard news based over the time that it's been out. Print, ink on paper is a very user-friendly medium. You know, I don't take my cell phone or my PDA or my handheld this or that out on Lake Michigan on an air mattress in the summer, but I sure take my newspaper or my magazine, and if I roll over and get wet, I either throw it away or dry it off. It's very useful. Number two, there's a whole new kind of newspaper coming. If you walk into a Borders bookstore, you can pick up something called a Sony Reader, which has e-ink. It's paper that is electronic. It changes. And we've seen prototypes of newspapers that literally that page of paper will have the newspaper on it. It will update itself as it lays on your desk. Well, what is it? Is it a piece of paper? Yeah. Is it a flat screen? Yeah. Is it digital? Yes. It kind of blurs the where we're going. Might it be 2 years, 3 years from now, the replacement in some situations for the printed paper? Maybe. You know, the world is changing, and I think the question for an informed society, a democratic society that needs to know what's going on, is, are there new avenues that young people and their parents will use to find out what's happening? The printed newspaper will be around for a very long time because it's a huge older population, and they like it. And, oh, by the way, young people do read the paper. Not as much, but they do read it. Number two, there's lots of changes coming, and people are trying new products like Red Eye, and that's going to be there. But it's the mistake I think your listeners need to stay away from, if they're going to kind of work through all of this, is to think about it in the way we all grew up with it, whatever our ages. It's not these silos of you read the newspaper and I watch television. It's a portfolio of things. The younger the generation, the more places they get news and information, the more means they take it in with, and the real question becomes, can they become informed citizen by aggregating all that portfolio of ways to take it in? One. And two, will advertising or somebody support it? What's the economics behind it? That's the challenge for us, and the jury is still out on that one.
We are at our midpoint already, and I have several callers, and we want to get right to them. Let me introduce again the guest, John Levine. He's dean of the Medill School of Journalism. He's professor of media management and strategy in Medill and the Kellogg School of Management. Before becoming dean January of last year, he was the founding director of Northwestern's Media Management Center. Before coming to Northwestern, he was professor of media economics at the University of Minnesota. And before that, for more than 25 years, he was publisher-editor of four daily and four weekly newspapers in Wisconsin. Questions welcome, 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Again, listeners, will help us by trying to be brief. We have our lines full, and we'll try to get in as many folks as we can. We'll start out with someone calling on a cell phone from Paxton. This is line four, toll-free line. Hello.
Yeah, hi, David. Yes. Very interesting show. Thanks for taking my call. Sure. A couple of quick observations, and I'll go ahead and ring off since time is a tyrant. Growing up on the south side of Chicago, I remember my father sending me to the corner for the Daily News Red Streak, which was 7 cents. I'm 51 years old. And it was so curious to me because they'd have the box score of the Cubs game up until about the fifth inning. And trying to imagine something like that today is just mystifying. And also remembering delivering the Chicago American, which was a 3:30 paper. And I'm guessing that is all historical by the way of the dinosaur. That's never going to come back. I was surprised on a recent trip to New York. They have something like 45 or 50 newspapers, which just mystified me. And I'm guessing that's because of the diverse population and probably the ethnic quality of the city. Having those many daily newspapers or weekly newspapers in this day and age is astounding to me. I do agree with your guest. I think we have to stop looking at the newspaper in the way I do as a 51-year-old, or my father did, and we have to just look at it perhaps as a communication vehicle, being diverse in many different avenues. I know I get the Sunday paper of Chicago Tribune, which is already dated because I live downstate, but I like to sit and read it, and my kids look at me like, what are you doing? That's old news, you know. So just a kind of a conservation between the generations, and I appreciate the guest's comment. Thank you.
Okay, well, thank you.
Well, let me only say that I would imagine the number of 50 papers in New York is three times that many, and I'll bet there are that many in the Chicago metropolitan area as well. There's stunning numbers of daily and weekly newspapers in many languages, and the more diverse the city, the more real that is, literally in the hundreds. You know, for lots of people, it's a wonderful way to get the news. But I understand, I'm a lot older than he is, so I certainly understand getting the afternoon paper. Let me only suggest, however, that that hasn't, in some ways, it's back. You know, I can now get the paper whenever I want, and I can get the news updated because I can go online at 3:30 or 6:30 or midnight. And once we go to 24/7, you're going to have a newspaper that truly is something that goes round the clock, and that's quite exciting.
All right, let's talk next with someone back here where we are, Champaign County, Line 1. Hello. They're calling there, Line 1, Champaign County.
I guess I'm here.
Go ahead.
You just were talking about this red eye. I want to loop back to something you started with, but I think it's lighter than the reader. I'm not sure you did the contact and or the after analysis to see if people are actually reading the articles, and maybe just lighter than the reader. As far, and then you have your entertainment listings in it. So I don't want to be entirely cynical. I think there's a problem with people not having enough leisure time to write as many, to read as many newspapers as there were in the past. So that's pretty much broader than a broader cultural thing. And I guess people have enough time to have the tube on 6 hours a day. So maybe that isn't entirely fair. But I wanted to. You were talking about the cutbacks. What about this idea that the foreign correspondents are being decimated? It seems to me the Boston Globe is pulling all of theirs back. The New York Times bought them a while back and had some kind of agreement to keep them sound for a while, but now I guess they're just going to use all the foreign stuff's going to come from the Herald Tribune and the Times reporters, and they're just going to have the local beat and the national beat with their own reporters. So, I mean, the idea that it wasn't so long ago we had to know why the rest of the world disliked us or hated us. The figures have gone up subsequently, and we're still foreign correspondents are being cut back. I don't know if you have chapter and verse and statistics on that. I guess I should probably let you answer here, but I was listening to a discussion on a Washington area public radio this morning where this same issue was being discussed, and to show that. There's separation of ownership and reporting, they use the curious example of the Washington Post and the New York Times vis-a-vis the lead-up to Iraq. They said the Washington Post editorials favored the war pretty much, but the reporting was more critical, though they did allow that the critical articles weren't placed on the front page typically. Walter Pincus's articles were on A7 or something. Whereas the reverse was true at the Times, that the editorial stance was, which generally reflects the owners or family, was against the war, but the propaganda value of the front page Times and Judith Miller and Gordon stories were so instrumental in the war. And they used this curious example as a way of illustrating that, that reporters were still sort of in some way isolated from the ownership. And I don't think it's very fair, but I just found it such a curious anecdote that I thought I'd relay it to you and ask you to comment on. Is that three things? Thank you.
All right, go
ahead. Let me tick through them. There are cutbacks in foreign coverage. There's no question about that. Some of them, I guess, I don't really mind because some of them are simply repetitive. It's Me Too-ism. The concern I have, and I share this, I'm sure, with your listener, is, you know, it's not just that two papers both have a reporter each have a reporter somewhere that sort of say the same thing. It's, are we really getting diverse viewpoints of what's going on in the world about us, about world affairs, about all of that? I don't think we have a good system for telling those stories and hearing from people who might say them in a way that makes us uncomfortable but gives us a very different view. So I'm concerned about international coverage. We're about to build a new school abroad. We're going to do a whole bunch of things to make our students go abroad twice the amount that the university students do. I think the world is getting smaller and smaller, and if we don't deal with that, we all pay a price. So that's one. Two, I think for if you're in Chicago and you see the two newspapers, let me just say that I think the Reader and Red Eye play very different roles. You know, the Reader really is an entertainment paper, and they do a quite good job of it. The young people that were in the focus groups for Red Eye were quite clear they wanted much more of a newspaper. And I think if you really, for 5 days, set aside the Sun-Times and the Tribune and just read Red Eye and then go back and read those two, as I have done, you come away saying, I'm not nearly as well informed as I would be if I read the big papers, but I'm a lot better informed than I thought I would be. And that's an experiment that I would just urge your readers to have some fun with. Let's see, that's two of them. What was the third one?
Well, it was more complicated, I guess, and it had to do with, I suppose, the editorial postures of two major independent papers.
Let me say that I think the media did not do adequate or anywhere near good job. Lousy grades on coverage leading up to and the early period of time that we went into Iraq. The media really dropped the ball. They didn't ask tough questions. They didn't follow up. It was post 9/11, which of course got, you know, there was also some degree of hiding under a rock. Oh goodness, we need to, you know, hunker down and the world is a problem. We, you know, the weapons of mass destruction is only one part of that. We did not play the watchdog role that the media should play, period. I happen to know a reasonable amount about both the New York Times and the Washington Post, their ownership. I've been in their newsrooms. I've sat in on editorial meetings. And, let me just disabuse you. They do take editorial positions. It's very seldom, actually, that the Graham family in Washington or the Sulzberger family in New York ever is involved in the editorials. But they pick the people that are on those editorial pages, and they are opinion. No question about that. But the separation between the editorial department and the news department is pretty ironclad. And if you're going to throw rocks at either of them for what they did in news coverage, do it. You don't have to tie it to the editorial side. You don't have to tie it to the families. They didn't do a good job. I don't think it's tied to the editorial coverage. I think they didn't do a good job. That's the bottom line, and that's the one we ought to focus on and hold them accountable for it.
All right, let's talk with caller in Champaign next, line two. Hello.
Hi.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering, previously in history, there were more major papers. Is that correct?
Yes.
Like maybe if we look at a 100-year view, that was the way people used to get the news, right?
Mm-hmm.
And in competition with other things, over a period of time, the papers have gotten weaker. Is that correct, too?
I wouldn't say weaker. There's fewer of them. You could reasonably argue that some of the papers that have come out of that era are actually bigger and stronger and have better journalism than they did then. But you're absolutely right. There were, you know, when the lifestyle of America was different, when mom was at home and hadn't gone to work, when people weren't on the farm, and so a whole lot of people read the paper in the end of the day. First of all, you had evening newspapers. Secondly, you had far fewer outlets for news. So the newspaper was the player. Let me say one more thing. The digital world that's coming at us, if you're going to oversimplify but have some real fundamental understanding of it, can be summarized with three words: fragmentation of media and markets and audience, choice from that fragmentation, more and more and more choice of where you can go, and as a result, more competition. From two kids.
What I would add to that is
People
are voting with their feet. I think they have less interest in what the newspapers have to say and more interest in other things, whether that be NASCAR or gardening shows or Flip mm-hmm. This House or whatever it may be. The people have voted with their feet. They are not as interested in what journalists in the typical model have to say, and the proof is in the pudding, and that is less people read the paper than ever before.
Well,
that's
I think
not
you're
the way they're getting their news.
Yeah, I think you're right. Even beyond the paper, they're also. I mean, if you really want to look at an audience that's been decimated, look at how little news there is on radio anymore. Every station used to have it. Look at the
decimate means reduced by 10%. It's been much worse than that.
Yeah, but television is much worse than that. I mean, we agree. People are going elsewhere, and they're using all this new media to find things that are better. And I've spent the last 15 years looking at how we do what we do in the news side of these businesses, and there is no question the old model of presenting the news is not working, and people are voting with their time. I couldn't agree with you more. There are places in the world that have turned that around, but there are not many of them, but they're starting to show up.
See, what bothers me is everybody spends a lot of time on the model and not the message. If they made news that people were interested in reading, no problem selling the paper, because the paper itself is a good way to get the news.
It's not
a problem of forum or the way that the news is delivered, because the papers moved almost seamlessly into the digital age. They had the personnel and the news gathering ability and the way to tell a story, like an experience doing it, and credibility. I don't think that was their problem. I think they're not telling people what they want. Like, they're not saying things people want to hear.
Well,
even just the confrontational way that they gather the news, where it's, you know, every newspaper reporter wants to make his bones by bringing down the mighty. I don't think that's it. I think people can tell that they're biased and they don't trust them anymore.
Well, that isn't what the studies say, but I think people don't want what's there, and the culture of newspapers and the way they define the news is not working. We agree on that. It's not bias when you really dig into thousands of readers as we have, but that they're not saying it in a way that people are interested in, and it's not an interesting story, and as a result they leave. Boy, you're right on with that.
I want to again thank the caller. I have one other one to get to. We got about just 10 minutes left, and quickly I'd like to reintroduce our guest, John Levine. He's dean of the Medill School of Journalism at Northwestern University. He's professor of media management and strategy in Medill and the Kellogg School of Management. And we're talking about what's happening with newspapers today, what's happening with journalism today. Questions, comments, welcome. We have someone here in Urbana. This is our next caller, line 3. Hello.
Oh, hi. How are you?
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting to see how the form of how media is delivered is changing, and how people, as you're right, very correct about the fact that the diversity of it is also diluting. I think it dilutes it a little bit because people have so many choices now they can ignore. When you get a paper, in and of itself, you have the front page, the lead, and the headlines, and then you have all the other items within the paper, so you can either ignore the headline or you can skip to the parts you like. But now you can just go directly to what you want to, you know, your interests are. So in a way, that could actually lead to a less informed audience, because why even bother to read anything but the fluff or the non-confrontational pieces? So I'm wondering if you concern yourself with things like that when you instruct your students as to how the media has become so fragmented that how do they get numbers? You were talking about the Iraq war. You could smell that coming. I mean, back right after, 9/11, and then you could see the administration working this up in the, you know, the fever pitch. And the media just, in my opinion, and I agree with you, is that they just stood by and watched, or they participated. And I was wondering, I'm sure you got alternate view. I read a lot of European press, some of it translated into English, but I it's amazing to see this stuff, and that's one thing the web is good for, is overseas stuff. But good show, David. Thank you.
Well, I think the biggest takeaway from all of this is we do instruct our students, but more important, the readers tell us if news answers some basic questions like, does it look out for my interest? Does it make me a better citizen, a better consumer, have a better life? Is it something that I can value? Is it relevant? Is it different than all the stuff I can get elsewhere? Is it differentiated? So does it update what's going on? Can I really trust it? Those sorts of things, when done well, are working around the world and in the U.S., and papers, newspapers, and other news media are growing. But you really have to do them well, because the competition and the fragmentation that we talked about earlier are tremendous. And as a result, you can't nibble at these changes. You have to jump in and really understand your audience and watchdog journalism and bring it home in a way that people say, I want to read that. I will have a better day and a better life if I do.
Let me ask about something different. Do you have some sense about what is happening with the number of independently owned papers as opposed to those that are parts of large chains?
The big 41 metros and the big newspaper groups own the preponderance of circulation, to use a metric we shouldn't, but it's simpler in this case. There's a huge turnover, on the other hand, among smaller, middle-sized and smaller dailies. They're sold. And it's not useful to talk about groups because a lot of them are owned by individuals who own two or three. We now have a whole new phenomena, which is the investment banks coming in and the funds, and no one quite knows how effective that will be or how much they will play. They bought Minneapolis recently, a big paper. So there is less diversity of ownership, but that isn't at the moment a big problem. The bigger problem is, the holistic nature of the media. I mean, who owns magazines? Who owns websites? Who has impact on a community? You really have to look beyond the newspapers to get some understanding of how the media is owned and where that's going. Mm-hmm. And right now, a whole lot of it is driven by economics, and no one has the crystal ball is pretty foggy. No one knows where that's going, and people are making bets. Sam Zell just certainly made a huge one with the employees of the Tribune here in Chicago. And if it plays out, it'll be very successful. And, the employees will own it. It will have gone private. And many of the things we talked about today won't be issues.
Yeah.
But it's a big gamble.
Well, I think that's an interesting question, because I think that there are some people who believe that that is a solution, and maybe not the solution, but a solution for some of the problems that we've talked about, particularly the pressure of investors and stockholders to generate a certain level of profit on papers. Some people would say, well, maybe the thing to do is for papers to go private.
Well, yes. And with Wall Street being so high pressured and avaricious, I guess, you could argue that. The problem you've got is that most papers were private and then went public to become more liquid and to raise the kind of capital they needed to grow. There are rotten public papers. There are rotten private papers. I worry about Wall Street thinking quarter to quarter and this quarter this year versus this quarter last year. So if you go to that market for money, you pay a price for it. But being private is not a panacea either. We watched Philadelphia bought, taken private, huge layoffs. It's not so simple as just the ownership. That's a factor. And it can lessen the Wall Street pressure, and that can be good. But really, when it's all said and done, what's the leadership like? How committed are they to journalism? Can they turn out a product, just like your audience is talking about, can they turn out a product that has content that people want to spend time with, whether that content is on paper or online or on my cell phone? Can you really make that content come alive, whether it's selling goods and services and advertising or making me an informed citizen? That's the challenge. And I think it can work in either model. I think there are pros and cons of both of them.
One of the things that we have touched on certainly is this very competitive atmosphere that newspapers, other news organizations have to work in, because there are a lot of competing sources of information. And then within the world of media, there are many different kinds of media that are competing for people's attention. The one thing that concerns some folks is that, having said that, then you also have to note that all of the media that we consume, newspapers, books, magazines, internet, music, television, movies, and on and on, is a great deal of that is controlled by a relatively small number of companies. Four or five big companies dominate all of the world's media. And the concern there is that that might lead to a narrowing of viewpoints.
Well, that's just not true. Four or five companies don't control all of the world's big media. And moreover, this is the most exciting time to go into the media and journalism in my lifetime. And I'll be 67, and I've been doing this since 1964. The simple fact is there are more opportunities to be entrepreneurial and start something exciting on paper, on the web, on air, like we're doing right now, on streaming audio or video that we could call television, and we've just begun to scratch the surface of what that's all about. Yes, there are big companies, but remember what their motivation is pretty clear. The ones that are big know that if they start putting their oar in that pond and anyone gets a whiff they're doing it, it's going to get exposed instantly. I mean, the nice thing about the web is you don't have to wait 3 weeks for your letter to the editor to get printed. You have to wait about 30 nanoseconds. There are lots of big companies. There will be. That's the nature of the world with 6 billion people that we're in. But the opportunities to make a mark, when I started, you had to have a press and a newspaper and a building, and it was huge. Now you need a computer and a hookup. And life can really take off, and a video camera and an audio recorder, and you're in business. Watch what the kids are bringing out today. I love going to classes and seeing what they're doing. They're terrific. And I have every confidence that they're going to figure this out and make it even more exciting.
You talked a little bit earlier, noted about how, say, in the city of Chicago, like Chicago, how many newspapers there are. There are lots and lots of them, dailies, weeklies, in many different languages, serving many different kinds of groups of people. It is also the case, though, that I think Chicago is now one of the few cities anymore that does have two major daily papers, the Tribune and the Sun-Times. I think some people ask the question, can Chicago continue to support both of these papers? Do you think that is true, or that we might see one of them go?
I think it's a real challenge. I think there's no doubt about that. We also know there are some other big cities and I'm not saying anything that's unknown. You know, the future of the San Francisco Chronicle, with its economics at the moment, and some of the other metropolitan papers, is really precarious. On the flip side, there are some big cities where the paper's doing very well. But, you know, whether I have confidence that the Sun-Times and the Tribune, especially in a market of this size, will figure it out and will continue for the benefit of all of us to wrestle with each other and survive. But I don't think that's guaranteed. And your question's fair. Hmm. That's a real issue. The thing that comes alongside of it is, when every television station in February of 2009 gets three more channels, or four as they go digital, when radio stations get into news because they can compete against the newspaper and television, and they're doing digital and audio and putting it on their websites, you're going to see a proliferation of news in a market like Chicago from sources you've never thought about. And a whole lot of folks are starting other websites that are very news-based, with niche news and broad market news that will be quite exciting. Now, much of it won't survive, but it's going to give us kind of a variety we've never had. Mm-hmm. And the younger generation loves that variety, and they take in that variety. The caller that said he was 51, his generation and mine tend to be quite focused. I mean, you read a newspaper and you read a news magazine and you watch certain television news shows, and it's narrow. But, that isn't the way you have to do it. And it isn't generational. I mean, I clearly love keeping up with my students, or trying, and the front of my computer screen has enormous number of news feeds on it, and I can do it, and anybody can do it. Yeah. So we're going into a very exciting, tumultuous time.
Well, even if you're going to do that, even if you're going to decide that you're going to be a nonprofit, you got to somehow manage to pay the bills and the associated cost. And what's the thinking about the two basic models? The one model, I suppose, being supporting your product by advertising, and the other would be supporting your product by subscription. Is it going to be one or the other of those things?
Well, I think it's going to be a whole mixture of those things, and I think you're going to have combinations of them that we really haven't thought about. But there will certainly be, and there are already, some sites, some news feeds that are sponsored. And it'll be one sponsor, and some that have advertising, and there'll be lots of advertisers, and some that are subscription only, and you'll pay for it. The Wall Street Journal, basically, to get it online, you pay for it. Mm-hmm. And the New York Times, to get it online, you don't pay for it. And each of them have figured out a different way to make that work. And we're going to see more variety than we've ever dreamed of seeing. And we haven't talked about the biggest subject of change out there, which is citizen news, citizen journalism, which is enormous. You know, in South Korea, the most wired country on the planet, there's a newspaper that has 44,000 citizens writing for it every morning. And they put up the stories they're going to write and ask them what the audience, what they think about them. And they do audio and video and text and feed it in. And they have a very small staff of reporters and editors that fact check, that cover things that aren't covered. But that's almost a cooperative community. That's the labor is free. You know, we've just begun. The changes are enormous.
Well, I want to thank you very much for giving us some of your time. We certainly appreciate it.
Oh, David, it was fun. And thank you for inviting me. Yeah.
John Levine, he's dean of the Medill School of Journalism, Northwestern University, where he's also professor of media management and strategy at Medill and in the Kellogg School of Management. You also want to say thanks to the folks up at Northwestern on the other end of the connection so that we could have that high-quality connection between here and there. It's considerably better than what we usually have when we talk to somebody over the telephone.